Welcome, everyone. Let's get started. My name is Eric Mott, Vice President of Community at CyCor, and I'll be your moderator and a case study presenter today. Our topic is managing the connected marketing journey. So you may be asking, you know, yourself or us, you know, what is connected marketing or why connected marketing now? Well, last month we did a survey that went out to a number of marketers, a little more than 260 respondents. And we asked the question, what are your challenges or anticipated challenges with social media? And the response was quite surprising, but you know, clearly an opportunity for us to talk about. So nearly 60% of marketers said they don't have a social media strategy. And nearly 70% of marketers said they don't, that they're under-resourced or they don't have enough time. And so we thought, you know, while social media is only one component of a connected marketing strategy, it also includes the web and email and mobile and e-commerce and analytics, CRM, a number of APIs. It's a very much of an integrated marketing discussion. We thought this would be the perfect time to talk to you about connected marketing since many marketers feel they need a strategy, and I think this is one to consider. So just a few tips to get things going here to make this an enjoyable experience for you. We are recording the webinar, and we will send attendees the recorded presentation in a couple of days. That will also include a PDF, so feel free to share the on-demand presentation and the PDF with colleagues who were not able to attend. If you have questions or comments during the live webinar, please post them in a dialogue window on your webinar toolbar. Or we have actually a Twitter discussion that's going on right now, and you can use hashtag #PoundCyCorCMJ, and that's CMJ for Connected Marketing Journey. Before we get into today's discussion, I'd like to briefly tell you a little bit about us and our successful customers and partners. CyCor's web content management system, portal, and marketing automation software solutions enable companies to deliver compelling web experiences. Our award-winning software makes it easy for businesses to create and update dynamic, full-featured websites of all types. CyCor's industry-leading flexibility and scalability allows organizations to better leverage their content, improve customer experiences, and drive business growth. You can learn more about our CMS, portal, online marketing suite, and email campaign manager solutions by visiting CyCor.net. This webinar will discuss and illustrate how progressive organizations, including a CyCor case study featuring Manchester City Football Club, are leveraging a connected marketing strategy to increase the value of their websites and to improve digital experiences for all of their target audiences. We're very proud to be collaborating with some of the most successful B2B and B2C brands in the world, including executive, marketing, and technology teams. Here's just a handful of thousands of customers and partners that we have the pleasure of serving every day. Okay, I'd like just to take a moment to introduce our featured presenter today, Mr. David Daniels. David is a co-author of the book Email Marketing, An Hour a Day, and served as Vice President and Principal Analyst with Forrester and Jupiter Research. With over 20 years of experience, David is an advisor to the Online Trust Alliance and the DMA's Email Experience Council. He's held senior-level positions at Apple, Urban Outfitters, Anthropology, Micro Warehouse, and ProTeam. Currently, David leads a relevancy group, which is dedicated to educating the market on the imperative tactics needed to foster trust with consumers and improve organizations' relevance within the broader online economy. David has also been a contributor to the Weekend Today show on NBC. I'm going to take a moment now just to pass over the presentation to David. Bear with me.
Well, thank you, Eric, and thank you all for joining us today. Today we're going to be sharing with you some very compelling content that includes fresh research from the Relevancy Group. We'll be discussing the challenges for us as brands and as marketers to get the customer's attention. We'll then introduce you to the concept of connected marketing and discuss the current state of affairs of online marketing. We hope that you'll then discover why connected marketing is an important strategy. But that's really when we get into the details, and we'll provide you with a connected marketing framework and tactical recommendations to leverage these concepts. Throughout the presentation, we'll share some wonderful success stories, and as Eric mentioned, a case study. And we'll highlight some of the challenges that you can expect along the way on your connected marketing journey. finally, we'll be taking your questions live, so stay tuned for that portion of the programming. So today, we have to think of our society as a society where we seek instant gratification. And I somewhat jokingly, but in a sort of a serious manner, blame Federal Express for this sort of change in our society. If you remember 20, 30, almost 40 years ago now, when they changed the world and they began to guarantee overnight shipping on time every time. And if you're familiar with those early days of Federal Express, there are famous stories in those early days where they would fly helicopters or even use dog sleds to fulfill these new promises that they were giving to us as consumers. And soon after, we were able to forgo long bank lines and treat ourselves to automatic telling machines to satisfy our need for instant gratification. And certainly we've seen how the internet and mobile devices have further connected and powered these attitudes of ours and really have shifted our society to that of a multitasking society. So, but that notion of multitasking is really not necessarily new. So this is a picture you can see here from the 1950s here, and these silver things are actually hair dryers. So certainly taking us back and dating us in this connected marketing journey, but I think it's important to point out that, again, this concept of multitasking is not new. So here's a woman bringing her baby to the salon. This woman behind her is actually reading that's a magazine. That's not an iPad or a Kindle. She's also getting a manicure done, so getting her hair dried, watching over the baby, getting her nails done, and having an actual person-to-person conversation, not something that's confined within the walls of a closed social network, but an actual human interaction. Social multitasking today at the salon may look like this. Note that there's little social interaction with those around us sometimes, that we have shifted really sort of inward, and that our social conversations are in those closed social networks, whether it's our phone book or the social networking sites that we use, but we're still certainly multitasking. And again, that notion, even when we were at work, is not necessarily new. So here's a photo from certainly the days before Bluetooth, where this woman is transcribing a phone call and listening or contributing to that phone call. And just for fun here, you can see what she's doing with her left hand is playing solitaire. So again, that notion of multitasking in the workplace, not so new. Now what we see, though, is today as we're on the move, are images that are quite scary, actually. We continually find new ways to squeeze more into our already time-starved days, which is really shifting our behavior. So here you see a woman on the phone and with a little mini computer. An image, I think, unfortunately, that's becoming all too common as we are trying to cram more and more into our busy days. Well, one of the things that's helping us to empower that behavior is that if you think back even 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, we used to have multiple dedicated computers for certain tasks. Now, the computer that was dedicated as a graphics powerhouse. And now really what we've done is we have devices that basically have apps, right? We've got a mobile phone and or we have a computer that is powerful enough to run all these multiple applications. And that has further sort of empowered not only the consumer's expectation for instant gratification and empowered that behavior of multitasking, but it's also shifted our behavior in such a way where we're trying to get so much more done in such a shorter window of time. And at the Relevancy Group, we talk about this as a short burst society. So we know that 50% of the population across borders are skipping commercials with the use of digital video and time-shifting technology, moving programs to your mobile devices. Certainly we're all familiar with the popularity of Facebook, now 550 million users worldwide. And 50% of us on Facebook are placing short status updates on our pages every day, our profile pages. 105 million using Twitter, and there was a story yesterday, I think it was in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, that talked about the executive shift at Twitter over this past week, And they refreshed some of these stats. I believe the number is now up to about 150 million users, and that's not surprising because there's 300,000 new people signing up for it every day. And here in the United States, we're beginning to catch up with you all in Europe in that most of us now have mobile devices that have a texting or a short messaging system type of plan. So that's about 203 million consumers here in the U.S. But this notion is really creating a society where the letter K has now become a word, where we are now writing in such short bursts to one another that it would make a postcard seem verbose. So as marketers, we really have to understand that and really be able to wedge ourselves into the consumer or the customer's busy life in short bursts. So think about that when you begin to think of your content plan, and we'll give you some ideas for that as we move forward. But one thing that's very important to understand is that all of these social activities is really continuing to fuel email growth. Email is our digital fingerprint. We need it to have a Facebook account or a Twitter account or even do important online activities such as online banking or commerce. So Facebook continues to grow, and that growth is really helping to fuel the email infrastructure. In the United States here, there are 270 million U.S. email accounts, and we see that growing to 290 million in 2012. So think about that when somebody messages you on Facebook, you probably get an email message to alert you that that's happened. Or when a new follower might follow you on Twitter, you'll get an email message. Now, Facebook's done a fantastic job, I think, in allowing the customer to begin to manage their preferences, to say, no, I really want that message to come via SMS when it's this type of message or when it comes from this type of friend. And so I think as consumers get used to the robust preference policies that Facebook has begun to afford us all, that the consumer, again, is going to have a heightened expectation that other brands, other marketers, allow that same type of flexibility in the way to interact with them. But we also have to point out here that online social networking is not a new concept. So this is an ad from the service CompuServe, which certainly now defunct, but this goes back to September in 1979. And notice here what they're pitching. Last night, we exchanged letters with Mom, and we had a party for 11 people in 9 different states, and we only had to wash one glass. So that sounds a lot like today's social networking. And it's very similar in that there was also another competing service around this time called Prodigy, very much like, say, Facebook and MySpace, where there was a walled garden between those two services as there is today. So I can't directly message a MySpace user from within Facebook. Similarly, we had these same challenges back in the 70s and 80s and until these platforms really became absorbed by America Online and some of the other acquisitions that occurred throughout the 90s. But, you know, my family, we had a business, one of the first online stores in CompuServe back there in the 80s, and tell you that when we would have to look at who was purchasing what from us, we'd print that out on green bar paper, if you're old enough to remember that, and then have to manually transcribe that information into a spreadsheet, those early spreadsheets, to have a concentrated or singular view of our online measurement. So what's happening today is that it is becoming easier to get that measurement and that data all in one location, but it's more difficult in the sense that there are so many more channels. Let's talk about connected marketing and why it's important to bring all of this together. So central to connected marketing is your data and the content that you have. I'll talk about why content is still so important, but bringing together all of your client, subscriber, and prospect data is a very important notion. In fact, connected marketing is marketing that's integrated across channels, so search and email, social and mobile, but in a manner to leverage that addressable customer, subscriber, and prospect data in order to drive your greater campaign effectiveness. Well, that sounds maybe easy enough. We're talking about data integration, but that can also be very difficult. But the real trick here with connected marketing is to really have an organization, a coordinated customer-centric organization, where success is really measured on the customer experience. certainly things like clicks and revenue and profits are still important. But increasingly, since the consumer is interacting with us at such a rapid pace in the social sphere, it's important to make sure you're measuring that customer experience. But it requires an organization to really change and begin to work together across company silos to make this really an effective marketing strategy. And we'll talk about some of those tactics of how you move into it. But one other point about connected marketing is that it really supports the natural life cycle of customer management. So think of the web really as your nucleus, right? That's your main online presence is your website. Again, why that data and content at the hub of connected marketing is so important. But you've got search, where you're either doing that organically or you're placing keyword ads out there. So driving acquisition, usually to an email landing page where you're hopefully converting those people into email subscribers. That's going to continue the journey to conversion and hopefully retention. But using other channels, such as mobile, to further drive engagement with your audience. And then we know that if we've got people that are highly engaged, they typically become advocates for our brands. And so measuring all of those different pieces around this life cycle is really imperative to understand how our business is succeeding in the online economy today. So sort of really sets up the notion of why connected marketing is so important. But before I jump into connected marketing and all those tactics, just one reminder why content is so important. So you'll see a bunch of TV shows here come up on your screen. We started with The Cosby Show and Cheers and Seinfeld and Friends, perhaps shows that are common to you. So that's what NBC used to run on what they called must-see TV on Thursday nights here in the United States. And it was working out very well for them until they followed Friends with a Friends spinoff called Joey. And immediately they began to lose their audience. This is just sort of a parable to show you that content is still king, and as marketers, we're really storytellers. And when they lost their audience, NBC, in those days, it was also around the time where broadband penetration was really starting to take hold and became critical mass. And so now what we see is that the only place you can get 40 million eyeballs, at least in America, on a Thursday night is on Yahoo. And we've seen a shift in advertising away from, not totally away from TV, but more advertisers spending their money to where the audience has gone or is going to. Now, NBC is certainly, they did begin to rebuild their content and their story, but they had to import it, in fact, from the UK. They started to turn around their programming with The Office. So again, now that they are beginning to regain their Thursday night presence, it shows that content is really, really important. So outside of managing content, though, we've got lots of other things to do, particularly as email marketers. So this is a survey from the Relevancy Group that we did in April. You can see here we surveyed 486 individuals in the U.S., 188 in the United Kingdom, and we've broken out across a number of different verticals. But the top challenges that we continue to see or subscriber and list churn, as well as managing email frequency. When we ask consumers, why are you not engaged with the marketer's email program, the top two responses are, it's no longer relevant to me, so something's changed, either I've changed and moved on out of that life cycle of what they're selling to me, or the marketer really is not pushing me what I expected them to push me. And then also managing frequency. Frequency is the second top reason why consumers opt out of email messages. They're just getting too much of it. And we recently completed a global study that shows, particularly on the mobile channel, frequency is a subscriber list churn driver. So if you're hitting people too often or too frequently, even with mobile marketing messages, you're going to see some of the same effects that challenge us within the email marketing channel. But all of those top three things, churn, frequency, managing deliverability, are really all interrelated. And if you're not able to analyze campaign results, it's going to be much harder to affect change and optimize your email programs. So we know these challenges are real, And they usually point back to lack of budget or lack of staffing. But one of the things that we find, again in the same study, is that when we ask marketers about the data attributes that they use to segment their audience, to target those email marketing mailings, while there are marketers certainly using geographic and demographic data, all wonderful attributes, even attitudinal information, you'll see overall it's only about 50% of the marketers are actually using the data that they have to segment and target their audience, indicating that half of the market isn't doing any segmentation or targeting at all. So it's not surprising that we see things like subscriber and list churn becoming such a large challenge for marketers. So one of the things that's very key here is email click behavior, the ability to know who's clicking on your email or not, who's engaged with you or not. And are you really sending out messages to a group of customers that are just not even listening? So it would be similar to, if you've seen any old Wild Western movies here from the United States, really sort of marketing into a ghost town, right? I'm just pushing messages into a city that could be completely empty. And so without understanding if people are engaged is really tantamount to throwing your money away. And so that's one of the first things you have to do as a tactic, is really just begin to understand that subscriber behavior, not only what they're doing on the email channel, but also within social and on your website, most importantly. So on many levels, we see that the marketer knows that this notion of connecting to social marketing is important. Again, from the same survey that the Relevancy Group did, we see that marketers are beginning to integrate and connect to fan pages on social sites, and experiment with Twitter both for marketing and customer service purposes. But again, it's still a very early period in the social marketing continuum. Again, it's less than 50% of those that we surveyed. Now, we expect that these numbers will be different within the next 12 months. As you can see here, there are a number of marketers looking to hop on to the social bandwagon. We're going to share with you some practices, if you're already doing some social marketing, on how you might be able to jump ahead of those other people that will be coming online with their social marketing plans. But one other, a couple of other points on why connected marketing is so important is that consumers see our brands holistically. They don't necessarily think of ABC Retailer from their email program, from their offline store, from their online store. No, we see ABC Retailer. So consumers are certainly not channel blind, and they expect that same experience, whether it's relevance or just the delightful customer experience they might enjoy with your brand, across all of the channels. And they have those same demands for relevance, and our data certainly indicates that. The other reason why connected marketing is so important is what I was talking to, and sort of really integrating the organization and getting everybody on the same page. Often we find when we go into organizations, it looks something like this, all of these separate silos, where you've got the email marketing people sort of tethered to one silo. There might be some interns or an agency that's helping with social media, and then the smart new kids on the block that are helping with mobile marketing strategies. But very often, we find that this data is not coming together and integrated, nor is the organization aligned to share these insights or even have some of the common goals. We also know that sometimes there'll be people like this approaching us once they figure out that, wow, email is really, really successful. It's that cost effective, and can you just take another list and blast out another list to a group of subscribers, or do things that might be risky, such as affiliate marketing or renting lists? And so we have to combat all of those sort of internal corporate battles if we want to move our program up the ladder of corporate success. So let's talk about how you do that. So at the Relevancy Group, we've created a framework. We call it the Connected Marketing Framework 4. And why we call it the number 4 is because there's four sort of major unifying concepts. So one is to talk about become this master of organizational change. And that connected marketing is a journey, so that your organization is going to be empowered, or your marketing plan is going to be empowered and optimized by a company that works together across departments and corporate silos, that is optimized by moving to a collaborative organizational market model, and one that integrates the company across people and the data that you have, the content that's available to you, the processes, all of the channels that you may be serving, as well as the service providers that you work with. And remember, we're talking about becoming a master here, but it is a journey. So knowing that change will continue to change is part of mastering the notion of change. We'll give you some tactics on that. Second part of the framework is to understand that interactivity is key today to being a marketer online. So that social message interaction empowers the success of the connected company to really optimize marketing to meet those specific corporate goals, whether it's acquisition, so driving followers and fans to become actual email subscribers or customers, driving retention through the use of understanding what people are saying about your brand or your products, and further driving engagement by getting people to contribute reviews about your products or commentary about your brand. But the other thing that we must do as marketers, and we're so fortunate as marketers, that the notion of trial and error is actually acceptable. So not many other professions, right? Think of a doctor, or, goodness, an airplane pilot, or an accountant, right? Those are professions where failure really is not tolerable at all. So we have to really test when we connect to new and emerging channels, but also within channels such as email, to ensure that we're figuring out what works and what doesn't work. The third piece is institutionalizing not only the notion of measurement throughout the organization and analysis, but reconstructing and creating new measures of success. So what we're talking about here is that connected marketing really relies on the interplay between channels and campaigns, applications and tactics. And connected marketing is really about connected measurement. So thinking about the proper measurement attribution. So if you have an email subscriber that's also a follower on Twitter and they're purchasing from you, which channel should maybe be getting the credit for that? So to effectively measure key performance indicators, or those KPIs, and aligning them to specific corporate goals. And again, we'll give you some tactics. And then certainly we're the relevancy group, so it wouldn't we'd be remiss if we weren't talking about allowing relevance to guide every customer interaction, whether that's inbound or outbound marketing, acquisition or retention, sales or service, or online or offline. The customer expectations for relevance doesn't change by channel, and marketers, we really have to be equipped to implement relevancy-empowering tactics, and those would be things like testing and segmentation and personalization. So let's talk about really one example here, which might be how you came to be with us today. So this would be a campaign to drive people to a webinar. And the ability to test and execute this multi-channel campaign from a single provider and or connected multiple providers is very important. Just think about it. This campaign started as a search campaign, right? Here are some keywords, whether that's organic search engine placement or there were keywords that were actually purchased and bid upon. Subject line testing. There is an email. There is an A version and a B version of a subject line. So that's another piece of that's got to be connected when we do a simple campaign as far as promoting a webinar. Then there was a blog that then went out and propagated a Facebook page that was then shortened to be out on Twitter that automatically fired off a LinkedIn post, and then that was all consumable through an RSS feed. And then finally, there's been some mobile components here as we've been doing these webinars. And not only understanding what is the proper short code and how we can engage an audience via this channel, but also ensuring that the majority of consumers are now reading and triaging their email on their handheld devices. So are our email messages rendering appropriately on those mobile devices? So it's quite a lot to do just to get a simple campaign out the door. And so in order to achieve that type of campaign, and again, whether you're a small organization or a large organization, the ability to really integrate data, insight, and processes across the organization is paramount. So things to look for when you're looking for providers or within your organization to see if you can begin to pull this off is, can your experience in the application be customized to your workflow? So meaning, how do you share data across the organization? How quickly can you get data in and out as it relates to those different channels? How does your provider integrate those other disparate data sources and systems? And how can reporting and measurement be aggregated to provide a comprehensive insight to the campaign performance and the customer's experience? So this might be including social commentary with overlaying things such as mobile or email acquisition. Because your ability to connect and be relevant is based on your ability to access your data and make it actionable. So another tactic to empower connected marketing is to really recognize that subscriber across the channels and business unit. So data remains that bedrock of marketing, but can you view it holistically? And how can that data be used on a regular basis to segment your customers? And soon you'll see some case studies and some proof points of those that employ these types of tactics and their success versus those that don't. How is a subscriber valued across the organization? And I think this is one of the key things that if you don't know the value of your email subscribers, should be the first thing that you do when you go back to work today. But then also look at what is the value of that subscriber if they're also following you on Facebook or Twitter. And again, how are you sharing that data across the organization? The ability to collaborate on content is so key. Right, we talked about content being king and how it can be leveraged to create a compelling story, but what is the mechanism within your organization to collaborate and share content and all of the assets that you're developing, whether they're images or text or even video? So the array of your corporate logo, the number of different formats that we might need even just a simple corporate logo in, has really exploded because of the mobile channel and video and that email and the rendering issues sometimes even in the email channel, not to mention all the places it needs to be propagated against the web. So look for solutions that allow you to collaborate in that manner. And can that single asset really be managed and repurposed, as I was just mentioning, across all of those channels? I'm going to move on and talk about measurement and really, key to this, if we think about where everything is connected, the organization must be able to measure the subscriber's value holistically. And identifying not just the value of your email address, but identifying how many of those email subscribers are also following you or social fans of you or are commenting on your products or services in the blogosphere. Measuring the impact of your marketing spend holistically is really going to determine which channel is driving the greatest value. So that's something that's got to be done across the organization. And does your organization have the measurement to really figure out what that interplay of subscribers is across channels? One of the most important things, though, that connected marketing can bring to the organization is the ability to set common goals within the organization and make sure that the organization is also measured and incentivized to meet those common goals. So I'll tell you, there's one client we've been working with, a retailer, and we went in and we talked to their email marketing team and their marketing staff. And we said, how are you incentivized? How do you know if you're doing a good job at the end of the month? How do you get your bonuses? And they say, well, it's purely the number of new subscribers. It's all about list growth for us. We have a goal to acquire more email addresses from our existing customers. Then we talked to the call center operation people, and we found that they were incentivized to reduce the talk time of the phone calls. And they said, by adding the 30 seconds of talk time on that call in order to ask for the email address was in conflict with their goal. So the result, obviously, was the call center was disincentivized to collect those email addresses. So ensure that the goal and the personal rewards are the same, but that you're working across the organization to share that insight and inform the strategic and tactical best practices that are really working to meet those goals. And lastly, are those goals aligned with the customer experience that you're seeking to provide? So I'm going to pause here, and Eric is going to take you through an exciting connected marketing case study that shows how a marketer has really put these concepts together in action. Eric?
Thank you, David. That was great. So when I was thinking about what connected marketing case study we would want to feature today, one occurred to me that I think, you know, certainly is clearly evident. It shows evidence that they've got their game down and they've made some changes to their game, and no pun intended. And that's Manchester City. This is a football club out of the UK. And, you know, I was thinking back, too, the World Cup recently was on the world stage. It was a lot of buzz for the past, you know, back in June, July period, where a lot of teams were competing. And so I thought this would be a great case study to focus on for the next 7 or 8 minutes or so, and then we'll wrap up with some final recommendations and some tips for you. So City, they wanted to define a whole new era of football websites because they were working and competing in a market, honestly, where perhaps many of those football websites that they were competing with were not that compelling. So they had a desire to really step up the game, to really improve the web and the digital experience, to improve the community opportunity for their fans, not only locally, but on a world stage, to reach out to other regions of, worldwide. And they wanted to make it more of an entertainment type of experience versus just a sports type of website to sell tickets. But, you know, of course, there were some challenges and things, and they recognized that. But, you know, they had some aspirations. And first and foremost, they wanted this to be kind of a one-stop shop to celebrate the club's fans and the love of the club, and to make things very emotional, provide lots of great content, make things very accessible. And so some of the attributes or the aspirations they had was, let's make it easy. Let's make the content shareable. Let's make it personal. They have a number of partners, so they wanted to make it partner-friendly for editorial or for related services like video feeds and that kind of thing. Of course, they're a business, so they had to make it highly transactional. They had to make it involving. They wanted to be groundbreaking with the design and with the, you know, the impression you get throughout the journey of interacting with the club. They wanted to make this an immersive experience and keep evolving, because after all, it is a journey. But, you know, like I said earlier, there are challenges in sport and in life and in business, and they recognized this. But they went ahead and worked with Sitecore and Aqueduct and a number of other folks to go off in a four-month time frame and really update and improve the web experience. But they had to consider a number of issues. So, for example, high traffic volume. Not only did they have good traffic prior to the redesign, but they were anticipating more traffic. They were going to integrate video, and video not only from past types of games and excerpts, but also, you know, real time. They wanted to make the design uncompromising, almost radical. Multi-language support. If they're going to be a global franchise, if you will, they had to be able to speak to people in their native tongue. Real-time updates from the field. They wanted to drive sales. They wanted to incorporate high-res photography, multi-system integration with, you know, e-commerce systems and other content systems. And they had to anticipate traffic spikes, either because of, you know, activity around a game or an event. And so what they were able to do at launch day was they attracted 90,000 unique visits. They had 60,000 unique visitors, 1,000 shop orders, and 50,000 in revenue. So quite impressive right out of the gate. In the first 100 days, they had 9 million visits. They had 3 million unique visitors, 45 million page views, 5 pages per visit. And on average, visitors were spending about 4 minutes on the site. So these are quite impressive statistics. And it didn't happen just by thinking of being a website. They wanted to create an experience. And if you look at this website, if you interact with the website, it's beautiful. It's very inviting. And what they have been able to do is to really bring the personality of the players, whether it's a goalkeeper or a defender, and to get into very specific details of those players and stories from those players. On game day, or they could even give you in real time the details of the actual positions, what was happening around scores. So whether you were in the stands or you were on a mobile device somewhere at home or on the road or whatever, you had access to the experience no matter what. And when I was watching the final of the World Cup, I was actually in Washington, D.C., and I was frustrated because while I had a mobile phone with me, I didn't know which site to go to get the latest scores and what was happening with the different teams. And it would have been very nice to have a site like this at my disposal to talk about all the World Cup activity. Getting into more of the specifics around players and how to integrate commerce. So you could feature personalities, but then there's also products associated with it. This is all updated fairly regularly on a dynamic basis. And video. So again, I mentioned video. Brightcove was involved with some of the integration around the video. Interviews, real-time clips, things that people were voting, are voting up and preferring, making user-generated content part of this experience. So, what they wanted to do was create something beyond a website. They wanted to create a community platform to serve a global community. And they wanted to connect fans with fans in addition to fans with players and the club itself. And I think, from a very simple sketch, this is how they viewed the kind of the social interaction or the social integration that David talked about, is the brand and the fans are in the middle. And they didn't create a community within necessarily the website, but they're relying on various social networks like Facebook and fan sites and, of course, email and email marketing, Flickr, Twitter, and, of course, the website itself. And this is kind of how they view it. And the result so far from a social perspective has been quite impressive. Facebook, 145,000 fans and counting, and that's started with zero at the top of the season. It's the third largest referrer after direct input or Google searches. 1,500 fans interact each day with Manchester City through Facebook, and of course on the website itself, coming back from Facebook feeds and such. And then over 5,000 new fans join weekly, and I heard actually that number is increasing because the site has been out for quite a while and they've really got some experience under their belts. Twitter, 35,000 followers and growing, 100 plus new followers daily. There's Twitter commentary during the game, so live conversations, discussions, retweets, that all helps with engagement. 10% of the followers are actually saying, hey, I'm a fan of Manchester, and they're incorporating the Twibbon in their own tweets to signify that they are fans, loyal fans of City. And, of course, more social media integration is not only on the horizon but in play. Flickr photos, I mentioned, they're sharing and inviting, user-generated content. Foursquare, probably you've heard something about Foursquare. It's one of the fastest-growing social networks around mobility and where am I and kind of voting people up in their standing. More ROI tracking via these various channels with different tools and things. Again, I mentioned earlier that more localized languages, and of course some of these languages are very hard to publish because they're different. And so the design had to accommodate for this, and not only on the website, but they're doing more in social networks. And of course they're integrating Umbro playlists and Spotify playlists to help make the experience even more engaging. What's next? Well, as what we've been talking to you about these past 35, 40 minutes is that, it really is a journey. But it always continues. There's always change. And for Manchester City, mobile is becoming more and more important to the club and to the fans. And so they're stepping up their mobile implementation now. They're also, as I mentioned earlier, they're incorporating more language, more engagement around the languages, the different languages, because they're growing their community worldwide and they need to respond to those different languages and cultures. They're also using Sitecore Online Marketing Suite more to link with CRM tools and to actually use personalization to improve their retail outcomes, improve promotions, improve e-commerce. If you want to learn more about this particular case study, you can go to sitecore.net, and there's a link here. Like I said earlier, this PDF and this presentation will be available to you within a couple of days, so don't fret. You'll have access to all the content. But there's lots of great case studies to tap into, and I think this is a wonderful story. In fact, it's an amazing video that's part of the case study. If you have a chance to view that, it's very, very inspirational. So with that, I'm going to hand it back to David.
Thank you, Eric, and that really is a truly inspirational story of how they're putting all the various moving pieces together. And so here are some final thoughts from us on how to make this work. First, this works, right? So this is a model from an upcoming study from the Relevancy Group. And in this research, we used our own survey data. We interviewed several retailers that fit it into the non-connected bucket and then those that fit that connected marketing profile. And for the purpose of consistency, we assumed that both groups were sending 2.9 million email messages a month. But we also looked at, when we grouped these folks, into do they have a connected marketing strategy within the organization, and are they actually really leveraging that data similar to what Manchester is doing in what Eric just spoke about. And you can see here that the results are quite staggering. So you can use this data, take it back to your organization, to say, you know, sell them, your peers, on this sort of notion that this really works. And I think one of the most interesting sort of facts on this slide is that if you look at the effective per-message cost to generate that revenue, so the non-connected marketers have a much higher per-message cost to generate that revenue because they're not engaging their full audience, whether that's via the email channel or the social channel. And you can see here the actual monthly costs were not that different in terms of the staffing and the infrastructure that they had in place. But the bottom line and the revenue that they were generating, those connected marketers have a very compelling story to talk about. So one of the other things that I just want to leave you with here is that this is certainly about change. And change can certainly be beautiful. We're experiencing a lovely fall here on the East Coast of the United States right now, so it sort of inspired me to share with you some of those images. And another beautiful picture of how change can be, but change can also stink sometimes, right? And it can be very, very difficult, in fact, that you've got to make some hard choices of what to cut and how to adjust and optimize those programs. It might be cutting or reappropriating spend across different channels to determine what's really working and what's resonating and moving your audience forward. And just one last thought is, even when you have that plan for change, sometimes that plan can also change. As you can see here in this architectural detail, that they didn't want the closet there after they put the closet in there for this planned addition. Another sort of reminder, and I had the opportunity to work for Apple when their logo looked like this. And we now know that their logo looks like that. And this is not simply about Apple changing the color of their logo, but I was at Apple in those days of Michael Spindler, what people sort of refer to as the dark days of Apple, even though there was innovation, you know, first digital camera, first mobile PDA, the Newton, if you remember that. But really what they've done, and certainly since Mr. Jobs came back, was create a culture of change within the organization, a culture of innovation. And, you know, they've recently surpassed Microsoft in terms of market value to become the largest technology company in the world in terms of market value. Another story that I can just remind you of is Urban Outfitters. They also own the brand Anthropologie. This is a picture of their first store in Wayne, Pennsylvania. But they've also realized that they had to change and adapt as their customers matured, since Urban Outfitters typically caters to younger or college-aged individuals. And one of their overarching themes with it that guides the whole organization is that each brand chooses a particular customer segment. And once they choose that segment, they set out to create the sustainable points of distinction within that segment. So they're doing relevancy even before they push a marketing message. So how to connect to social media and really inform some of the changes that we're talking about. Some things, you know, set short-term goals to larger milestones. So don't try to boil the ocean. A short-term goal would be getting everybody in the organization to understand the value of that email subscriber. And then that's the first step towards the larger milestone of universally capturing email throughout the entire enterprise in the call center at your retail stores. Know that our environment impacts our habits, and often we're physically siloed from our peers within the organization. So marketing might be on this floor within the company building, the call center might be in a separate physical location, and IT in another place. So know that you've got to work sometimes, spend time in those locations and in those environments. Create a checklist for change. So, you know, rocket boosters and NASA, do you have the right things? Do you have that plan in place? And do you have a checklist to make that happen? The other thing is to create this notion of a sterile cockpit. So that's an airline term of when airline pilots are coming down under 3,000 feet, and they can't have any conversation in the cockpit other than with the tower. So think about those silent hours or those silent zones within your organization to make sure you leave your colleagues in IT alone so that they can help bring some of this technology together for you. Push the envelope. We talked about trial and error, but if you think of Amazon's one-click ordering system or what IBM was able to achieve over the last century, really, that was all about trying new different types of things. Do you understand who your target subscriber is? Using personas is a very good way to do that. Sort of hang them up around the organization. What are the personas that identify your different customer segments? You can have fun with this. You can put names on them. What's their phone number? What's their Twitter handle? Right? So is that the type of organization, or is your organization the type of organization where everybody is aligned to the same types of target customers that you want? And then pushing into channels with that universal concept of a designated driver of the messaging, which often is email, because the email is so cost effective and it's usually the largest bit of data that any online organization has. So using that to drive into the social channels and beyond. So final thoughts, this is a journey, as Eric pointed out. So don't fear change. It is certainly constant. And those organizations that have that culture of change can really more quickly adapt and increase their odds of success. We talked about centralizing not only the data, but all of the processes and the content and the people. It's a tall task, but that's really what's going to empower the organization to delight the customer every time. And finally, last couple of points is embrace the notion of testing and interactivity. Set those common goals and incentives, and remain relevant in all that you do across channels. And with that, Eric, I think we have a few moments for questions.
Yes, we do. Thank you, David. I enjoyed the presentation. We've got about 6 minutes, and if we have a lot of questions, we can certainly go over maybe by a couple of minutes. We encourage you to continue to submit questions through the toolbar there on the webinar tool. And, of course, you know, let's chat it up here on Twitter with #PsychCoreCMJ. We're monitoring that. We're happy to follow up and such. I'd also like to let you know about an upcoming webinar before we get into the Q&A session. It's 7 web analytics metrics for your executives need to know, or your executives need to know, not for your executives. Well, I guess it's the same. And there's 2 different days here, October 26th and 27th, because like this series, we have a number of time zones that we're broadcasting to and we're interacting with, and we want to make it possible for various people around the world to benefit from these webinars. All right, so let's go ahead and get into some questions here, David. I know that we've gone through a lot of great content, and as mentioned earlier, it's all going to be available to attendees, both in PDF and as an on-demand playback. But, you know, very simple definition. If someone were going to tweet what connected marketing is, or someone was going to go to their boss and say, I just had this great webinar experience and I want to share it with you, what would they tell them?
So simply, I would say it's connected marketing is coordinated marketing across channels and across the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
And I was just saying, clearly email is central to that coordination because, as you pointed out, you know, there is value to a subscriber. And email, whether it's for email marketing purposes from a silo perspective, although we're trying to avoid silos, or because social networking utilizes email, it's a messaging type of coordination to some degree. And any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So thinking about just even what goes on between email and, say, Twitter. So we've certainly seen when subscribers want to get off your email list, often they will click the "this is spam" button, or they just won't do anything. They'll ignore it. But we have also seen cases of where people are saying, you know, they're lashing out against a brand on Twitter or in the social sphere just because the email is annoying them and not relevant. So that's the action they're taking. So even with, and that's maybe a negative example, but an important one of why you want to be listening to what's going on in the social channel as it relates to some of your other marketing channels. Conversely, I've seen examples of people heralding brands because they love what's going on. You know, Groupon, I think, is a good example of that, where they've built a very strong email marketing program, and they have so many people tweeting and about it every day. So both, you know, both the negative and the positive, it's important to understand what's going on with your email program as it relates to the social sphere.
Mm-hmm. And you talked a lot about, you know, kind of customer service or the customer being at the center of all this. And I know Manchester City, the case study we went over, talks a lot about this, is, you know, how do you make the fan or the customer at the center along with the brand experience and the brand, you know, needs around transactions, of course, because it's a business. Should marketing and customer service teams, you know, kind of be more one of the same, or how do you recommend organizations get more aligned between these these two different functions? Because, frankly, acquisition and retention could be potentially one and the same if you're just trying to grow your business. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think they are one and the same, acquisition, retention, and it sort of depends on the type of business that you're in. But I would certainly suggest that, you know, customer service, the call center, the people on the front lines that are interacting every day with the customers have a direct link to the marketing organization. Now, you might say, a B2B organization that is really strong in where the customer organizations are managed really by the sales organization, that it might be the other way around, where marketing is sort of rolled up within that corporate structure. But it's you know, the organizations I've been a part of, it's the ones that really work are the ones when you get the marketing people to come down to the call center, put on the headphones, and listen into calls. And that's where the real insights happen. Or when you go and visit an offline retail location and you understand how the marketing is either being represented or not represented by the people on the front lines. And so I think that connection from a corporate structure is very important.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, again, with the case study in Manchester City, they talk about being immersive. And I think immersive isn't just the fans being immersed, but it's the organization really getting to know what it is that drives people's emotions and frankly, their pocketbook, their spending habits. So, you know, getting in the field, just being one of the people you're trying to serve, maybe even having teams of people going out and experiencing these different channels virtually and, of course, in person, wherever you can, would be very helpful. You know, we talked a lot about attribution, and we often hear from marketers that, you know, they try to increase their budgets for, let's say, social media and networking. And we've seen evidence from research that a lot of organizations are investing more heavily in social media and networking. But these things are often hard to attribute, you know, conversion and revenue, whereas email is a little easier to attribute conversion and revenue. So is there any kind of formula or recommendation, tips that, you know, would help articulate how to best attribute sales across these different channels?
It somewhat depends, but there's a valuation spreadsheet that's available on our website or from one of our websites, which is CM, the letter F, as in Connected Marketing Framework, and the number 4, so CMF4.com. It's a serving suggestion of how you might value subscribers. And we're going to be expanding that shortly to include some of the social folks. But you know, the attribution of channels sometimes can be measured directly from the social feed, such as Twitter. So Dell has done a very good job. I think they get something in the neighborhood of $6 million this past year. They've moved used computers, and they've got a discount shop that those specials are only available via that Twitter feed. And so they can have a really direct line into what that channel is representing in terms of revenue and obviously the value of the people that are following them via that channel, even if you just did a simple arithmetic into followers into the revenue that it's generating. And that's additive revenue for Dell. That's not a channel shift story. And I think when you start to talk about attribution, that's the thing where it can get somewhat complicated. Are we actually adding and growing revenue, or are we just starting to shift some of our email revenue to a social channel or perhaps even offline or to mobile?
You know, and maybe to your point earlier about coming up with new measurement, maybe it's not as critical to worry about specific revenue from a specific channel. I mean, maybe holistically, if your revenue is growing or you're getting positive feedback in different channels, whether it's social or, you know, forward to a friend with email or whatever, maybe those are good indicators. Because sometimes I think we try to over-measure and analyze, and really maybe that's not as necessary as we think. I mean,
It's true. I mean, you don't want to create a culture that's analysis by paralysis, right? Or paralysis by analysis.
Yeah.
But I think understanding just at a high level even which channel is driving the overall holistic corporate revenue is important, so that maybe you need to invest more, whether it's in headcount or content creation, in some of those other channels, so that you're just aligning your budgets appropriately.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, your website is always going to be the hub where it all happens.
Absolutely. You know, without a website that can offer a really personalized and relevant experience, all of this is sort of for naught, in my opinion, anyway.
Okay, well, David, I want to thank you. We're actually out of time. We've gone over a couple minutes. And thank you for participating, folks, on the call here. As a reminder, we will be emailing you the link to the presentation, including a PDF. You'll have on-demand access to this webinar, so you can share it and play it again. And we hope you have a great day. Take care.